Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Cheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal-Reed. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author. We find out a little bit about their lives, what they write, and why they write it. And we have a chance to hear them read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to welcome Bridget Campion. Welcome, Bridget.
Thank you, Gwyn. It's wonderful to be here.
Good. Bridget was born and raised in Welland, then went to school in Toronto, where she stayed for 20 years, earning a PhD, working in hospitals as a clinical ethicist, and teaching at the University of Toronto and the Toronto School of Theology. She moved to Coburg over 15 years ago and has brought up her four children here. Now she still does research in bioethics, has taught ethics to nursing students at Trent University, and is presently Associate Dean at Sacred Heart in Peterborough. Recently, she has published both a book of poetry and a novel, My Cousin Julia. Bridget, you've been a member of the Coburg Poetry Workshop for a number of years, and I believe you started writing poetry in high school, well, I think like a lot of us.
I was going to say, didn't everybody?
Yes. Usually angst poetry for the first few years. But now you've released your first collection, and it's called Niagara Falls Trilogy. What is it about writing poetry that especially appeals to you?
I think the thing that I like about poetry is that it is so focused. It's so concentrated that you can say so much in so few words. I like the economy of it. For me, it is a place that I can put not simply feelings, but thoughts, and do it in, as I say, a very focused and concentrated way, rather than writing an entire academic paper about something. Actually, just in a few verses, in a few strokes, really get to the point.
I never thought of poetry quite that way, but yes, that's exactly what it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little fascinated, too, with the title, Niagara Falls Trilogy. What is the trilogy part refer to?
All right. Well, what happened was I had this idea, and for me, poems start with ideas. To back up, I guess I should say, I've always found Niagara Falls fascinating. For many people, they just simply think of it as a tourist place, but that's really just the surface of it. In fact, it has tremendous history. If you think of it geologically, it has thousands of years of history. But if you think of it from a human standpoint, here we have one of the terminals for the Underground Railroad, for instance. It was the site of several battles during the War of 1812. And it is a place that has transformed itself over the years. My background, having grown up in the Niagara Peninsula in the 1960s, it's something like being Michael Moore, who's from Michigan. This was a time of heavy industry, a particular time in the social history of Canadians and Southern Ontario. And the fact is that today, if you go back to Niagara Falls or to the Niagara Peninsula, there are only relics of this way of life. And now what do we have? We have a service industry, and we have an economy built on casinos.
Right.
You know, so it's just a fascinating, fascinating place.
What inspires the actual poems that you write, and how do you approach the writing of a poem?
Well, with the trilogy, as I say, I was working with the idea that when I wrote the first poem, I knew that there were going to be two more, okay? So that is the trilogy part. And again, for me, it was an interesting thing to be able to get into a narrative poem. So often, as you were saying, when we're writing poems in high school, it's about angst. You know, it's about, the anguish that's inside of us that just simply has to come out. And sometimes that will be poetry as we are adults as well. But what I found fascinating was that it was possible, again, using the economy of words, to be able to tell a story. And that's what the Niagara Falls Trilogy does. Now, but I was also saying that I find poems a great way to explore thoughts. And for instance, a poem that I'm not going to be reading today is called Discovery Channel. And it's about, you know, apparently lionesses in the pride, okay? But in fact, it was sparked by this, I saw a commercial on television about the importance of making sure that young women and girls are educated so that they can save the world. Now, in my opinion, young women and girls ought to be educated for themselves. Why is it that we are once again putting the fate of the world on the shoulders of women. You know? And so it's that thought, then, that is explored through a poem, as I say, rather than an academic paper.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that happens with me.
Would you like to read a couple of your poems for us?
Well, I would be delighted to. And what I've done is I've brought three poems with me. One is from the trilogy, and then I just have two others.
Wonderful.
If that would be okay?
Absolutely.
Alrighty. Niagara Falls 2, Waiting for Harry Houdini, Halloween, 1987. At Halloween, night comes early. Goblins flit along sidewalks to houses hidden among shuttered motels. The big lights have been dark since Labor Day and will not shine again until spring. The falls tumble anyway. Cold is colder in Niagara Falls, but the rates were cheap. This motel will close next week when the owners drive south to see their kids. They'll reopen in May, maybe April. Like everyone else, they wonder. Used to be, families came here, saw the falls, the wax museum, had a swim. Used to be, not anymore. He can tell us, a young couple from Toronto, he can tell us his woes. Outside the office, leaves clutter the dry, peeling pool. The sign blinks vacancy. My husband does not know Niagara Falls, not the way I do. He did not have Sunday drives along the parkway when the crowds had thinned, did not see the leaves turn to gold or the American Falls become ice. He did not follow his high school football team to Stamford or Myers, did not spend prom night across from the dark, thundering falls, did not take the lower bridge over the river to where the drinking age was 18 and the beer was cheap. He does not know the hydro cut, razor sharp, blasted through limestone, diverting water from the falls to form lakes and reservoirs throughout the peninsula, lakes and reservoirs with no swimmers or boaters because of the deadly currents. He did not spend time at the public pool behind Cyanamid, looking at the white dust that coated the chemical factory while waiting for a turn on the diving board. And he doesn't understand what the oil crisis did, turning a garish, teeming tourist trap into a ghost town. Halloween night. All the little goblins are asleep. My husband is too, but I am awake. Outside our window, the ice machine rumbles, the pop machine buzzes, a car speeds down Ferry Street and is gone. Halloween night. It used to be that seances were held in Niagara Falls. He promised his wife, Harry did, that if he could, he would speak to her from the other side. Harry Houdini, once the most famous man in the world. No handcuffs could hold him, no straitjacket or tank of water either. Upside down, blindfolded, wrapped in chains. Somehow he found his way out. He died on Halloween night, Harry did, took a punch to the gut in Montreal, died of an appendix that would have burst anyway in Detroit. He made his wife a widow who, after 10 years, freed herself from the shackles of candles and Ouija boards, crystal balls and clairvoyance, and walked away from a promise that could not be kept. I am tempted to leave my bed and go to Clifton Hill, to the museum that houses Harry's effects, and see whether anyone has gathered this year. I am tempted to drive past the worn prostitutes who work the empty streets and see whether candles light any windows along the way. I am tempted, but I burrow into the lumpy bed and press my back against my husband's. Even Harry could not escape the inescapable. Death, taxes, the ties that bind. And neither could I, at least not then. February. I am living in a snow globe with snow people who snow blow snow globe snowflakes into death-defying piles that snow children turn into snow castles. Snow families carry snow shovels and ice skates to secret ponds in snowy woods while snow animals leave snow tracks that crisscross snowy fields. I am living in a snow globe. At night I walk and the ground sparkles. Snow feathers kiss my eyelashes. Beneath the streetlight I look up and see a million snowflakes rushing at me. I glimpse eternity. A poem for spring. Denizens of the backyard, occupants of the mid-sized trees, throaty songs first thing in the morning, solitary chirps just before darkness hush. Burnt orange-breasted with creosoted wings, robins. They listen for worms beneath the patchy grass, leave bits of blue egg by the roadside, converse clear across the neighborhood. Then, Without saying goodbye, they are gone, and winter begins, and we are left to endure ice and snow and silence. As water runs in the ditches again, we hear a note, catch a glimpse, until one day it seems the yard is filled with them once more, robins. They bring spring.
Oh, thank you, Bridget.
Thank you.
And now I think we'll take a short break.